Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us today on Gold Radio Cafe. It's August 23rd, 2013, and welcome to the Gold and Silver Financial Review. My name is Bosco Kacharovich. This program is brought to you by Central Metals, your gold and silver bullion dealer. Our website is centralmetalscorp.com, and our phone number is 800-649-6722. Our email address is mail@centralmetalscorp.com. If anyone wants to send in questions during the program, we can address those questions on air. Just to start off with a couple of quotes here, we have the gold market is down $1.95 at 1372.40. Let me just verify that 1 second here. No, that's incorrect. Sorry, folks. We got a conflicting market quotes here. The actual spot market for gold is 1397.5. Yet on one of my sources here, they're quoting $20 different, which is strange. I'm just realizing this here. 1 second, let me go to another site. This is very odd. Yeah, 1397. Okay, here we go. This is just goes to show that some websites have delayed quoting, so you have to be careful with what prices you're looking at when you're getting official quotes. I use for the spot market, I use FX Street. It's the Forex market for gold and silver. Anyways, just to continue, gold right now on the spot market is $13.97. We have silver at $23.77. So they're both up. There was a rally after the housing numbers came out. Apparently the housing numbers were not too impressive. New home sales were the lowest since October of last year, the biggest, I guess it's been the biggest drop since May of 2010. And we have here, I won't get into the details, basically the housing numbers came out down and it affected the markets. Anyway, let me just give you some other prices here. On platinum and palladium. We do have quotes on our website as well, by the way. Platinum is up $8 at $1,543. Palladium is down $2 at $751. Okay, now that we got that out of the way, some of the headline news that's coming out here is that yesterday the NASDAQ halted trading. For $5.7 trillion were locked up. NASDAQ unexplained trading halt Thursday locked up trading in stocks with a total market capitalization of $5.7 trillion. The extraordinary halt in the trading of more than 2,000 issues listed on the NASDAQ came after an as-yet undisclosed technical glitch. It halted trading in the tech industry's biggest names, including Apple, Google, Microsoft, Amazon, Cisco, and those five companies combined have a market cap of more than $1 trillion. This is an article posted yesterday on MarketWatch. So, folks, we have, you know, one thing to keep in mind that all these stocks and these exchanges are highly dependent on computer algorithms and computer trading and so on. And you have to remember all your accounts, your trading accounts and so on, whether you're trading on the internet or with a broker, a lot of it is dependent on technical a technical backdrop, computers and networking and so on. And you'll see in the terms and conditions of most of those contracts, practically all of them, you see that they're not going to be responsible for technical breakdowns or technical glitches. So if you lose money based on a technical glitch, they're not going to be responsible for it when it comes to trading. Okay, so you have to keep that in mind. By the way, we are going to have a very important show today. I have some things that I wanted to discuss on air that might open the eyes for many of our listeners. Jeff Dunphy, unfortunately, is not going to be able to join us today, but please stay tuned. We do have some important things to discuss today and some news that's coming out. So with that, we're going to get started right away here. One of the key things that is kind of the illusion, what's going on in the market, what people's impression or image is of value and money, I think is the key problem with the financial markets and investing right now, and just society in general. People have been distracted to what is true value, and how do you measure value, and how it's determined, how you can save for your retirement, and so on. And one of the things I'm going to try and stick to simple analogies here. One of them is, for example, if you take an old silver quarter from the 1960s. Okay, back in the 1960s, for example, you could buy a gallon of gas with 25 cents, okay, with a silver quarter. Back then, quarters were made out of silver, okay, and you can buy a gallon of gas. Now, if you take that same silver quarter today, okay, you can't actually go to the gas station and use the silver quarter to buy it. You can, but they'll only give you 25 cents for it. You have to go to a coin dealer who recognizes the value of silver, and he'll give you approximately $4 for it, okay? So if you take that same silver quarter from the 1960s, exchange it for what the current monetary value is of silver, you get your $4, and you can still go buy that same gallon of gasoline. Okay, so what happened, folks? What happened is that the government has devalued the currency by minting quarters out of zinc, copper, and steel now instead of silver. Okay, but the fact is that the true value of silver in comparison to other goods and services, whether it's food or gasoline and so on, still holds its value. So the person who had silver in the 1960s can still use those silver quarters today and not be affected by the effects of inflation, because you can still exchange that silver quarter for its true value, which is approximately $4 today, and still go buy the same gallon of gasoline. Okay, so you've isolated yourself from the effects of inflation. Okay. So this is where we have to understand what's true value. And I have another story about gold that I'm going to discuss in a minute. But now, another problem with the financial system now is the whole derivatives house of cards, if you will. Okay, and folks, what are derivatives? Derivatives are really it's a paper contract that's based on an underlying asset. So people trade derivatives, and they're basically placing bets on the movement of the price movement of a particular asset, which it's related to. Okay, it could be a house, it could be mortgages, it could be gold, it could be corn, soybeans, stocks, any other assets. So these derivatives are basically bet on the movement, the future price movement of an underlying asset. Okay, the key is the underlying asset. Now, you know, being in the financial markets for many years now, I'm originally a technical person. Okay, I went to college for electronics and mathematics, and you know, understanding numbers. Okay, and going into the financial markets, you basically, in my experience anyway, you deal with a lot of egos. Okay, these people in the brokerage industry and the financial markets, for some reason, have an ego that they think that they're smarter than everybody, and they know how to manage your money and so on. And they start talking about all these financial terms, derivatives, and puts and calls and options and futures and stocks and so on. And after you break it all down, I found personally that basically it's just a different language. Okay, these financial people, all they do is they know and understand a different language than the average person. But ultimately, it's all about numbers. Okay, if you understand basic mathematics and numbers, all you have to do is learn a new language. That's all. Okay, so we have the story that I'm getting to is my donkey story. And we've had in the past, I'm not sure if everyone is familiar with the long-term capital management debacle back in the 90s, that the people that started this company or hedge fund, I believe it was a hedge fund, won a Nobel Prize for their mathematic algorithms and so on that they used to invest money. And I'm sure everybody knows that long-term capital management collapsed, and it sent shockwaves through the financial system because of all the derivatives that they were holding, you know, collapsed. And collapsed the entire system. They had to get a big bailout or something. I forget what happened. But these are Nobel Prize winning bankers, I guess, okay, mathematicians. I believe they were mathematicians. Now, markets are affected not only by mathematics, they're affected by politics. You have to integrate human nature into there. You have to integrate the environment. You know, you have to understand that natural disasters and everything can affect markets. So it's been proven that purely mathematics and algorithms cannot be successful in investing in markets, okay? So, and currently, as we've seen, like at the beginning of the program, we discussed there's NASDAQ has halted trading yesterday to the tune of $5.7 trillion. And everyone knows that now there's so much high-speed computer algorithms that are doing the trading for companies that it's, you know, it can affect the technology that is behind all these trades. So now here's the story. Now keep in mind that this is a just a basic story. What I'm trying to do is just kind of give you a picture of the whole derivative makeup and how paper contracts are integrated into governments and the bond market, stock market, and commodities and so on. Now we have a farmer. A farmer is looking to sell his donkey. So he finds a banker. This banker, let's assume that it was one of the guys that created long-term capital management, and he won a Nobel Prize for mathematics, okay? So we're just going to call him the banker for now. Okay, so the banker goes to the farmer, and this banker, for some reason, wants to buy a donkey, okay? So the farmer sells him the donkey for $100, okay? The farmer tells the banker, okay, come by tomorrow to pick up your donkey, okay? So the banker gave the farmer $100, and he comes back tomorrow with the truck to pick up his donkey, and the farmer tells him that, sorry, Mr. Banker, but the donkey died overnight. And the banker says, okay, well, that's fine. Give me my $100 back. And the farmer said, sorry, I spent your $100 last night. I went out, took my family out to the restaurant. Well, the banker was stuck, and what he says, well, give me the dead donkey then. And the farmer says to him, well, why do you want the dead donkey? He goes, that's my business. I'll take care of it. And he says, fine. So the farmer loads up the dead donkey on his truck, and the banker goes on his way. The next day, the banker, through his network of people and contacts, he puts out an email, let's say, or whatever. He starts advertising that he's going to raffle off a donkey. He has a donkey for sale, and he's selling raffle tickets. You could win a donkey. Okay, he doesn't tell anybody that it's a dead donkey, though. So the banker, who bought the donkey for $100, okay, goes out and he sells tickets for raffle tickets for $2 each, and he sells 1,000 tickets. Okay, he sells 1,000 tickets for $2 each, and he makes himself $2,000. Okay. So now, after all the tickets have been sold, the banker draws the raffle, okay? Somebody picks the raffle ticket. He has the secretary pick the raffle ticket, and they draw. The winner of the raffle was Mr. Smith, let's say. Okay, Mr. Smith, who bought a raffle ticket for $2, now wins a donkey. Everyone's all excited, and he's Mr. Smith is feeling great. He got a donkey for $2. Okay, the banker tells him to come back to the bank tomorrow or the next day to pick up the donkey. Okay, so Mr. Smith comes by the bank the next day and he talks to the banker and he says, "Well, where's my donkey?" He said, "Sorry, Mr. Smith, but your donkey died overnight." Well, Mr. Smith is upset, and he says, well, what about my raffle ticket? And the banker says, okay, well, here's your $2 back for the raffle ticket. Great. Mr. Smith is happy, and he goes on his way. So what just happened, folks? The banker sold 1,000 raffle tickets for $2. He made $2,000. His initial investment in the dead donkey was $100, so he has $1,900 in profit. Okay? What a great scam. Okay, nobody knows that the donkey was dead. They bought the raffle tickets. The only person that knows the donkey was dead was Mr. Smith because he's the one who came to claim his prize. After he found out the donkey was dead, he was upset, of course, but what happened? He got his $2 back and he's happy. So he's not going to complain. So the banker got away with a fraud and nobody knows the difference. Okay? This is what the derivatives industry is like. Okay, it's a bunch of paper contracts floating around that have an underlying asset that cannot perform. Okay, these raffle tickets that were sold by the banker, okay, were fraudulent raffle tickets because they were sold on the basis of a live donkey. Nobody asked the questions if the donkey was dead or alive, okay? But everyone assumed that so the donkey will not perform, okay? Same thing with the derivatives in the financial market. They're raffle tickets basically on the performance of an underlying asset. Now, that underlying asset, is it going to perform or is it not going to perform? This is the question, folks. Now, what's the risk of the banker? Okay, the risk here is if the banker, all the people that bought raffle tickets from the banker, if all those people find out that he sold raffle tickets on a dead donkey, I think the banker's going to have a serious problem. Okay? Now, so the banker, understanding this, he says, well, that's a potential risk. So what does the banker do? Well, he's going to call his friend in the insurance business. And he's going to say, I want to insure these assets and these paper raffle tickets that I sold. because if my clients find out that they bought raffle tickets on a dead donkey, I'm going to have a problem. So his insurance agent or his insurance broker says, okay, well, we'll come up with some kind of a policy to back you up, okay? And then you can see how the chain reaction, what it would be. This is basically what the mortgage derivatives debacle was about, okay? Banks selling, chopping up mortgages and selling mortgage derivatives to other institutions and so on that offer insurance on the performance of that mortgage, but the house collapsed because the person who took that mortgage didn't have fundamentally the income to support the mortgage, and then what happens, the true asset value of the house drops 50%, but your debt on that house is still the original purchase price, okay? So this is just to give you kind of a glimpse of, I guess, a basic terms of what the financial markets and these paper contracts that are floating around are really worth. There's some people say there's over $1 quadrillion worth of derivatives or contracts outstanding that have no home. They have no underlying asset that would make them worth anything. Okay, this is what's on the balance sheet of a lot of these central banks and international banking conglomerates. Okay, these companies, and what they're doing now is they're instituting this bail-in process. Okay, the bail-in process is official policy with the Bank of International Settlements. Okay, so even in Canada here, it was official as of June 10th that the bail-in policy will be instituted. It was in the Canadian budget, which was the 2013 Canadian budget. Now, these aren't speculation stories, folks. This is the fact, okay? The bail-in policy is now official policy with the BIS, and the BIS is the Bank of International Settlements in Switzerland that is kind of the central bank of central banks. So every central bank, Federal Reserve, the Bank of Canada, Bank of England, and so on, have to go under the policies of the BIS. So now let me just give you a little story about the gold, why gold has value. This is, trying to establish what is true value. Money and paper currency are not true value. Paper currencies, just like derivatives and other things, are based on the performance of the Federal Reserve. And you can pick up any bank note. It says it's a Federal Reserve note. It doesn't have any physical backing. It's based purely on the confidence of the central banking system and the government. Okay. And obviously we know that many governments around the world are actually bankrupt. Okay. And we see this starting to surface in Europe, and I think that there's a very good chance that it's going to spread into the United States and Canada as well. Many people think that Canada is isolated. I beg to differ. I think that our mortgage banking industry, which was is just as unstable as many others, and has been proven by research done by the Canadian Banking Association. They put out a speech earlier this year, and if anyone wants information on that, I can find the link and send it to you. Just send me an email at mail@centralmetalscorp.com. Now let's get on to our gold story here. Okay, what is true value? Why is gold valuable? Well, here's a story. 1,000 miners go into a mountain in search of gold for 6 months. They're going hungry and thirsty, searching for gold, okay, over a six-month period. Now, one of those 1,000 miners is going to find gold, okay? So what is that, the gold that he found, what is it worth? Is it worth just his labor of 6 months, going hungry and thirsty in the mountain searching for gold? No. That gold find is worth the other 999 other miners who found nothing, going hungry and thirsty in the mountains searching for gold. Okay? So that equates to actually 500 years of one man's labor. Okay? So that gold find is actually worth 500 years of labor. Okay? It's the only asset in the world that cannot be destroyed. Once gold is found and it's digged up and refined and, you know, designed or whatever into jewelry or put into coin form or whatever the case may be. Gold has very unique properties, folks, and why it's considered value for thousands of years. Okay, it has the perfect characteristics to perform as money or a medium of exchange, if you will. Okay, money is really just a medium of exchange. And some say that gold doesn't have any value, but it does, okay? And here's how it has value, because to find it and refine it takes a lot of technology, a lot of labor, and so on. And once it's refined, it cannot be destroyed. It can be evenly distributed, okay? 1 ounce of gold, it's fungible, in other words. 1 ounce of gold that I own is, and 1 ounce of gold that you own is the same ounce of gold, okay? So it can be evenly distributed. It's rare, okay? 1 ounce of gold is rare. It's a perfect store of value because it does not rust or corrode, so it can be stored for the next generation and the next generation and the next generation. Even at the bottom of the ocean, a gold treasure is still qualified as an asset. It still exists in its original form. Okay, it doesn't rust or corrode away. Okay, it's recognizable. Okay, you go to any country in the world and show them a gold coin or a gold jewelry, they'll know that it has value and they'll be willing to trade you something for it. Okay, this has been the nature of gold for thousands of years. Okay, it somehow gold has the perfect characteristics to it to perform as money or a medium of exchange. This is why for centuries and centuries, royal families around the world have accumulated gold as assets, as generational assets to pass on to their future estates and so on. So, a lot of financial people in the industry say that gold is not a good investment. It doesn't have intrinsic value because it doesn't produce interest or dividends. Well, gold, for one, it's not supposed to produce interest or dividends, and it's supposed to be a store of value. It's supposed to protect you against the government and a financial system that's gone haywire. And that's exactly what we have now. Why has gold been the best performing asset over the past 12 years? It's not that gold is performing, really, folks. Gold, 1 ounce of gold today is the same ounce of gold when it was trading for $35 50 years ago, or whatever the case is. The fact is that the increase in the money supply is affecting the price of gold. Okay? Same with if you use a loaf of bread. Right, a loaf of bread 50 years ago was 25 cents or a gallon of gas. It's not the gallon of gas or the loaf of bread that's changing. Okay, it's the value of your money that's changing. And when you have central banks and governments that are in control of the decision to create money and expand the monetary base, then they're affecting your true value. So how do you protect yourself against this? Because obviously they don't have your best interest in mind. Inflation is always going to be there, okay? So what you do, you have to have a significant portion of your assets in gold and silver-related assets or other tangible assets that maintain value over the long term, okay? Being balanced and diversified, folks, doesn't mean having your money in the markets and letting your financial planner spread it all over the place, okay? This is just an excuse for him to have your money, and, you know, to me, it's an excuse that 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 person doesn't know what he's doing, so he's just going to spread your money around and hope for the best, okay? You have some financial planners out there that, you know, get all excited because, you know, your portfolio only went down 17%, but the S&P 500 went down 25%, or whatever the case was in 2008, you know, the markets went down 30 and 40%. So I think unfortunately, we're in a position in history, in the market cycle, if you will, now, where we have financial instruments and governments who have obviously gone haywire. They have done things that benefit bankers and the banking system more than the tangible manufacturing base. We've had everyone has heard about what's going on in Detroit. We have, you know, America's capital of the automotive industry is bankrupt, okay? And the manufacturing base is depleting. The middle class is getting smaller and smaller. And we have, you know, a lot of the good-paying jobs are being sent overseas. Well, I mean, obviously that's not good for us here in North America. And one of the things that we can do to protect ourselves is put your money into tangible assets. Gold, my favorite is gold and silver. Whether I'm biased or not, really is irrelevant. The facts speak for themselves. Okay, I'm in the gold and silver market, and people that know me can check my track record. I've been bullish on gold since about 2004 when it was trading for $400 and some. Okay, gold right now, you know, as I said earlier, is like 1390. I'll give you another quote here. It's 1396 right now. Okay, so, and the key thing is, I think the key problem in the industry is people have kind of lost sight of what true value is. And I'm not saying that true value is only gold. There's other things that are valuable. You have to, you know, value farmland, value real estate. And real estate, too, as an investment, I'm not a big fan of investing in real estate because especially housing. It's different when you're investing in income-producing properties. That's a different market. But housing, you know, everyone's got to live somewhere. You have to have a house. You have to live there. You know, try to purchase your house without having a mortgage if possible. Right now, mortgage rates are low, but I think they're going to go higher. And, you know, if it's suitable for you to have a mortgage, then great if you have good job security. But if not, try not to buy your home with a mortgage. See if you can buy cash. If you can't afford a home, there's nothing wrong with renting. So you don't want to look at your house really as an investment because a house is continually costing you money. You have to pay taxes. If you have a mortgage, you're going to be paying interest. You have to pay utilities, upkeep, and so on. So, you know, I suggest that people don't look at their home as an investment. It's somewhere where you have to live. You want to make your home comfortable and so on. So there's other things of value, food, having a hobby farm, a garden in your backyard, you know, having food storage. It's valuable to have, you know, building your community, helping in the community, buying from local farmers, things of that nature. You know, value is different. Value in family, in relationships, in your community. Those kind of things are important items of value. Your investments, you know, you have to be careful with that because you have to understand that right now that there's, you know, the people that are in control of the markets and the politicians and the governments, they're all intertwined. And unfortunately, they're doing things that are not in our best interest. And, you know, we have to protect ourselves, you know, the best way we can. Now, for those of you out there that don't believe that a financial crisis is going to happen, you know, I think it's already happening. It's just happening in a way that you don't necessarily feel it as a shock, okay? It's happening slowly. slowly, little by little, our freedoms are being taken away. Laws and regulations are being created that are affecting our investments, our freedom, our standard of living. Okay, these are the keys to be careful of. You know, to say that the financial system hasn't collapsed, well, it already did collapse, folks. Okay, what happened in 2008 was a collapse. Okay, the entire financial system was on the verge of collapse. So what happened? In order to avoid a collapse, the bank and the government created the bailout program. Okay, TARP and quantitative easing and all that, that's bailing out the financial system. Okay, in my view, the financial system did collapse, but what the governments did was they backed it up with your tax dollars. Okay, this was the bailout process. Okay, so in actual fact, we are living under bankruptcy, and the financial system is putting up as collateral your future income, your tax dollars that you're going to pay. And that's how the government, you know, sells their bonds to other countries. But now other countries know what's going on. They're not even buying the bonds of the U.S. government. The Federal Reserve is. So when the Fed buys the bonds from the U.S. Treasury, that's monetary. Okay, that's monetary expansion. Okay, well, they call it monetization. They're creating more money. So by them creating more money, that's inflationary. Okay, inflation isn't prices going up. That's the result of monetary expansion. Okay, so you have to understand that inflation is always going to be there, and you have to protect yourself somehow because it's going to affect your standard of living. You look at the standard of living, folks. I mean, you know, prices are going higher, and it's not only, you know, that. You have to look at the new policies and laws that we're affected since, you know, over the past 10 or 12 years that they've instituted a lot of new regulations and restrictions on moving money around and so on. So, and again, for those that aren't believers that the system is going to crash, I mean, I my view, we're already living in a crashed system. A lot of it is coming to surface in Europe, you know, with the crises that are going on in Greece and Cyprus. And, you know, folks, this isn't nothing new. A lot of people think that, oh, no, this is, you know, people have been talking about a collapse for years and it's never happened. No, it did happen. We're living in it right now. Okay. It's just not a shock, you know, and, you know, a lot of people have faith in, you know, the U.S. Government, and I wish it was. I believe that the in capitalism, and I hope that they do turn things around and we can come back to some kind of stability. But, folks, you know, unfortunately, the politicians in control and the other established financiers and so on, call them what you will, you know, this isn't the first time they've done this, okay? Everybody, maybe not everybody, but, you know, in the 1971, the Nixon shock closed the gold window. And basically, if you just go to Google or Yahoo or YouTube, you can just type in the Nixon shock or Nixon gold window or whatever, and you can listen to his speech. Basically, what happened was Richard Nixon, he closed the gold window, and that was the end of the Bretton Woods Agreement, which after World War II, the U.S. was the basically became the international reserve currency of the world because after World War II, everyone in Europe sent their gold for safekeeping to the Federal Reserve. Okay, and then what happened was in 1971 when Nixon closed the gold window, he closed it basically because France started to call in their paper, their treasuries that were backed by gold. They said, oh, we don't want your treasuries, we want the gold. Okay, so this caused the Fed to put an end to the gold backing of their treasuries, which was promised by the Bretton Woods Agreement. So basically Nixon shocked the entire world, and they basically said, you know, sorry, we're defaulting on our promise from Bretton Woods, and we're not going to offer you gold in exchange for your U.S. Treasury paper. So, you know, that's a huge shock to the system. That means the fundamental underlying asset, okay, that the U.S. dollar was supposed to represent is not there. Okay, just like the donkey story. Okay, the underlying asset of U.S. Treasuries was supposed to be backed by gold. Well, it no longer was anymore. After Nixon made that announcement, he basically said to the world, sorry, we tricked you. We're no longer going to be backing the paper with gold, and if you don't like it, too bad. Okay? So this is what happened, folks. And if you think that our politicians and our bankers and everything are different now, well, I'm sorry, I don't think they are. I hope that they change their ways and come back to some kind of stability, but unfortunately, this isn't their track record. You know, a lot of these people are just looking out for their own best interest and how they can get reelected and so on, or keep their high positions as CEOs of banks or whatever the case may be, but I don't claim to know what the solution is. I know that one thing that I'm 100% confident in is that gold and silver is going to maintain its value over the long term. Again, folks, gold and silver are long-term savings, so you use them as a store of value, as savings, not money. So everybody needs money to run their business or to run their household or so on. You put your money in cash or other assets that you can liquidate quickly. Not to say that gold and silver you can't liquidate quickly. You can liquidate gold and silver just as fast as any other asset, but they're supposed to be used for long-term savings. Okay, so if anyone has any questions regarding the things that I discussed today, please give me a call at 800-649-6722. Or you can send me an email at mail@centralmetalscorp.com, and I can answer your questions through the email. Just to let you know, we do have vault storage facilities for people that want to move their assets into something safer like gold and silver. We can have your assets stored in a private, fully insured vault outside the banking system, and you can even have it stored in multiple different countries. Okay, to protect yourself against, to be diversified. So with that, folks, we're going to say goodbye for now, and hopefully we're going to have Jeff join us next week to give his perspective. And, you know, we look forward to speaking to you again. And this is Bosco Kocharovich of Central Metals Corp signing off. And I wish you all have a great weekend. Again, if anyone wants to give us a call, it's 800-649-6722, and our website is centralmetalscorp.com. Thank you, and goodbye.